It is Thursday, the 21st of May, 2015, and this is episode 246 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. I am Chris in the host seat, joined as ever and always by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Thundercats, ho! I don't know why that popped in my head, but it
Boom.
Did.
Boom, there it is. You need to let these things out if they're there. You need to pop them out into the world. Someone else would probably respond, however you're supposed to respond to that.
I have no idea.
No, nor have I. Let's get on with some news. We're better at that. Facebook, we're going to start with today, and they have announced their instant articles. This is Facebook acknowledging that they lose users and lose interested parties by sending them off to external websites, which then on mobiles take ages to load, and people don't come back because they get stuck in the mire. So they have developed this new feature called instant articles, which effectively is a way for them to load the content from within Facebook. So they have agreements with certain content providers, and those providers are then allowed to inject into the news articles, news feeds, these instant clickables. So where you might currently click to go to an external website, you click it and it immediately pops up with all the content, and it's rich media as well, so you can have moving videos and sort of images and stuff. So, and it looks quite good. It's only for iOS at the moment, I believe. Is that right?
It is. And it's, we talked, I think it was about 3-4 years ago. Remember there was this really lovely iOS app all about Al Gore and he's saving the planet, and it was done by Pushpop Press, and Facebook bought them.
Yes, that was one of the first ones, wasn't it?
And Pushpop Press, they ended up doing, there was a kind of different Facebook. Remember, there was an app that came out last year just for iOS, and it was a different, you know, it gave you the Facebook functionality, but it presented everything in a really lovely format. And this is a kind of follow on from it, and that they're using the same kind of features. So it's quite media rich. It's not just like an article. It's not, as you say, they want to keep you in Facebook, but instead of just giving you, you know, the same page and a web page, it's all, like when you get to a video, it kind of pops in really nicely. When you get to photos, you can swipe through them. They're all big and they present really nicely, and then you can just swipe on to the next text. It is a very, very, very nice format.
And they've also given the partners the control over their CSS and sort of styling. So they can even make it look like their own website if they need to or want to for branding purposes. They've also given them full access to their own advertising within these instant articles. But they will, let's say, you can keep all your revenue if it's your own advert that you've sold. But Facebook will sell adverts on your instant articles with a 30% premium for them.
Yeah, it's a select number of partners right now. So like Wall Street Journal, Guardian, National Geographic, New York Times, BuzzFeed, and even Guardian admitted they don't know whether they're doing a deal with the devil, but they're trying it. They don't want to miss out, and but at the same time they know they can.
I mean, there's such a massive user base. It's you know, it could be really important.
Can't ignore it. Yeah.
And I'm sure that they're just solidifying the kind of format and method for doing these things, and I think they will roll that out wider and wider because it's in their own interests and it's in the interests of a lot of the websites. If they can get their advertising revenues, it's much better to have an instant article rather than have to wait, basically.
Yep, and the content loads quickly as well. And if you want to see it, you need to be an iOS, you need to be an iPhone, and you need, if you search on Facebook for instant articles, there's a kind of Facebook page that's collecting them all, so you can try them.
Okay. Google has been a bit busy, so they've got their robot cars and they want to drive them on the roads now. Previously they've had cars on the road, but these have been sort of modified Lexus machines. The new machine they're trying to get out to the road is their kind of, I guess it's their, would you call it their beta model? I guess it's, you know, on software release sort of terms, they've had their alpha, they're doing their beta now, and these will still have safety drivers on board, but with a view to shortly, you know, getting rid of them even. And these are going to be sort of properly unmanned cars on the road, and they're trying to use this as a sort of as a learning device, because their test tracks and stuff that they use off of the public roads, you know, haven't been faced with all the kind of traffic situations that they're going to get into.
No, and they shared some stats about, you know, that so far, I think there've been, was it 8 accidents or something, but that's been people hitting them, not them hitting mm-hmm. other people. So they were kind of saying, not trying to just point the blame, but just saying, let's be clear. And that's a lot.
And
more.
How many accidents have humans had in the same time?
Exactly. So if you applied the same, you know, number of hours driven, it's far, far, far lower. Remember that old thing, you know, where's our jetpacks? This is that kind of future where, you know, people have talked about autonomous driving for so long now.
It's been in the movies for how long, you know?
Yep.
5 decades probably.
It just feels that step closer.
And isn't it cute? Have you seen the little car?
It's just a Johnny Cab.
It's properly cute.
You know, so if I won the lottery and they all have these, I'd just set up a Johnny Cab for them, just to do a Johnny Cab and Total Recall and all that nonsense.
They'd probably do better if they look like ugly as sin and evil, so people avoided them, rather than these little cute things, which are fun to bump into, clearly. Google asking to forget. There's a lot of people wanting to be forgot.
And, 250,000?
Yeah. And they're getting thousands of requests per day. So it's kind of dropping off a little bit now. So at its peak, it was about 1,500 requests a day. It's down to about 500. But yeah, that every single day people are, and UK is apparently a very, very high user of this service.
So I mean, on average, it's 1,500 removal requests per day, and that was in the first 3 months. That's now dropped to 500 requests, but that's still 180,000 a year. It's still a lot to, you know, it's a fairly major service. And
what still gets me about this, so Google are rejecting about 75% of the requests they get in, and they're actually doing it in, you know, the time it takes them to process that is getting shorter and shorter. They're down to about 16 days on average. But it's Google that's deciding what to reject and what to take. It's wrong. It's just Google aren't the people. I know they've been put into this position. They didn't want to be in the position. But the courts have made them judge, jury on what information should and shouldn't be there. And obviously then it causes other court cases to come off the back of it when people disagree with the decision that Google's made. I just don't see how it's Google's responsibility to work out what should and shouldn't be removed from their search engines. Anyway, apparently Facebook is the biggest. If you take a single block, that's where they get most requests to remove information from. But if you take Google, including all its sub-sites, so YouTube and Google Plus and stuff, actually they're a bigger block of content that people want to get removed from.
And you mentioned earlier, British and Germans are the most, so they're for 50% of all the requests just coming from those two countries. But Finland, Google has won a battle. A Finnish court has just ruled in favour of the company, saying it does not need to remove a series of results relating to a local man's business blunders.
Yeah.
So let's all move to Finland.
Sense may rule out. Mobile carriers, so are at threatening, it seems, although it seems a bit vague at the moment, they're threatening to block ads by Google. they're kind of saying, hey, this is we make these mobile handsets, these are our devices, and we want a share of this money that you keep making when you display adverts on our mobile devices. And that's what it seems like. If they're not going to get that share, they're prepared to use new technology that's been developed to block Google ads specifically on their mobile handsets.
But if this does happen, it is pretty controversial. I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not just and there's a whole, so there's a line that you can say it's net neutrality. You know, because it's back to somebody's now blocking content and they're deciding what you see as a consumer, not what you've asked to see. But it's more than that. I mean, I don't know about you. I run an ad blocker at home. And it's predominantly because of, it was the flash adverts. The flash adverts
and the fact that it makes performance dog slow. It chews up memory. And then you always have those adverts which break through the sandboxes. And there's been
quite an interesting debate, certainly on some of the blogs and the Twitter people that I follow. And it's interesting that a lot of journalists just saying, this will kill us. You know, we need We need adverts to survive. There is no other model that is keeping us going, keeping us paying for, you know, good journalism and the websites if we don't have adverts. And unless you're willing to pay, unless you're willing to pay as a consumer, the same way as you pay for a newspaper, we're kind of dead. And then and the other side of the coin is the folks saying, well, if you do it in a subtle way, you do it in a way that doesn't break my browser, doesn't ruin the kind of reading experience, because some of them are so invasive. It's just ugly. You know, it just really gets in the way of content.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, I mean, what gets me about this is, you know, is the angle, like I opened it up. They're mobile handset developers and network owners, right? And so that doesn't mean that they then get to decide, you know, they are having the internet on their device and their network, right? They don't get to decide what you do and don't get to see on that internet. You know, as mobile operators, they get to charge consumers for offering the service, the data that's going down their channels. They don't get to decide what data that should be. Well, I mean, clearly they want to decide that. They'll argue on many grounds as far as, you know, they're just trying to save bandwidth and stuff. Well, if they were trying to do that, they'd block all the stupid, you know, old websites which have massive images and stuff like that on them. It's just...
And the bandwidth argument is bogus. That's just kind of almost like the PR version of why they're doing it. They're doing it because they want some Google.
Yeah, they want the money. They are. It's basically blackmail.
Yeah.
We won't show your adverts at all unless you give us some money. And it's like I say, I don't see why they have that right. They can set up their own ad network, and if they're successful, then they can make the money out of being an advert network. But they shouldn't be trying to take money based on their network, based on the internet, basically.
Yeah, anyway. So it's like, kind of, watch the space. It's just rumors at the moment.
But it's kind of, they're quite high quality. Like, it's the Guardian, wasn't it, with an undisclosed source. So it's not like it's.
It was Financial Times.
Okay, they're Financial Times. So it's not like it's you know, just a blogger online who's got a message from, you know, third party removed. It's a proper source saying that, and it's already happening in the US in some places.
And there's been a couple of Israeli firms have developed this technology, so it's all known and out there. You know, they have been trying to flog it around a number of different providers.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. UK government. I just want to deep sighs. They've basically snuck in legislation which allows GCHQ police, immigration officers and other people of legal, you know, of government standing to be able to hack computers with no recourse. There was a piece of legislation which pretty much said that the GCHQ's actions when they were hacking computers before was illegal, and there's subtly, without due procedure, a bit of legislation's gone through to say, yeah, that's fine. And any criminal cases that were, or any cases that were being brought, or at least being talked about, have now being replied to by saying, you know, we have every right to hack computers.
So the bit I've not liked about this is it's not the fact that it's been passed, and I don't agree with that either, but it's the kind of sneaky way it was done. You know, so government of the day, they've won their way, they can pass what laws, they've got power in the parliament, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, this was part of a law passed last year. And it was last year that a complaint was raised by Privacy International, and it's taken them until now to actually disclose that the new legislation became effective last year, but we just didn't tell anybody about it. And they're allowed to do it, but it is more underhand than they'd normally behave.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it's just, you know, they know that this is a sensitive topic, and that's why they're no longer discussing these things. Because they know that they get blocked, because they're unpopular. So there's been no consultation widely with, there's been no democratic process. So there's not been any discussion in Parliament. No one's been notified of this. And the people that they did consult with are all the people that are due to benefit from the new regulation. So it's all a bit stinky.
Cox.
Free mobile's nice though, isn't it?
I'd love free mobile.
So basically a company is coming to the UK. They're already in the US. I'm just trying to find their name, Freedom Pop. And they already have free service in the US, and they're coming over the UK with a free mobile service. So you get 200 megabytes of data, 200 texts, 200 minutes of free voice calling every single month, with no cost associated. how do they make money? Well, they make money by selling add-ons, small sort of individual charges, maybe for rolling over some minutes to the next month, for add, you know, additional data if you want it. And for having an additional phone number as well. So you can you have two phone numbers on your SIM, one of which can be in a foreign country. So you can actually, say, call people in the US on a local rate rather than an international rate. So there you go. That's quite an interesting model.
It is. And I thought that'll eat a lot of the kind of, you know, pay as you go that are on. I mean,
that's clearly what it's designed to do, right?
My mom hardly uses it. It's there almost like an emergency for using the, you know, from a call and text perspective. So you think straight away, that's really nice. And the only bit that put me off, the only little niggle, was when somebody described it as the Ryanair of mobile networks.
Yeah, I wonder whether if you do go over your data allowances a bit wonga on the percentage charge increases. We'll see. But exactly like I say, that's a great... I mean, obviously it won't include things like the handset and stuff, so I'm sure it'll be, you know, you'll have to provide your own handset and things like that. You can buy a cheap... But you can, like I say, you can buy a cheap handset from Tesco for virtually nothing, can't you? And then you've got free use of a phone.
And at first I was like, even for travellers, you know, coming here, but you want data. And I'm sure their data charges are probably quite high. So, but they need to make money somehow. You know, they can't offer a free service like that without, you know...
Yeah, cool. Yeah, of course. I mean, they will be looking to make that money back in these small charges. But it sounds like they're not trying to do it punitively. Like I say, that's unclear. They're not, you know, they're not going to suddenly charge you £10 for a text every time you go over your limit. They're looking to do it via value-added service, and I think that's the right way. If it can live up to their hype, anyway. Microsoft, they've picked a name for picked a name for their phone version of their Windows.
Windows 10 Mobile.
Yeah, that's very original. Mind you, it's better than what was Windows 8 one? Was it Mobile Windows 8 Phone or something stupid?
It was ridiculous. It was like 8 words or something. Yeah. It was...
Anyway, so yeah, Windows 10 Mobile sounds good. And even though they keep chuffing on about how this will be one version that will live cross devices, it turns out there will actually be... 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, at least 8 different kind of flavors of this, which will be optimized for different platforms. So even though it's the same core set, they will optimize per platform.
And the thing is, you've got Windows 10 Mobile and a Windows 10 Mobile Enterprise. And
right.
It's just like, okay. And the one that made me chuckle the most was Windows 10 IoT Core, you know, for that Internet of Things, because you've got to get that buzzword
That's
in somewhere.
Right. Yeah. So it remains to be seen how the core center of that program does stay the same, whether it is really the same or whether it's actually just lots of different things that look the same.
It's a bit that still makes me uneasy. I just don't know how they're going to do it. It just feels so ambitious.
But that's good. It's good that it's ambitious. We'll see what it comes out with. They've also backtrack on their kind of their offer of a free update for pirates. They've now said, no, you will have to pay. But they have said also that it's going to be some good deals. If you're running to a pirated copy, they will let you get to a legitimate version relatively cheaply. And they haven't given details of that. But that sounds, for me, that sounds like the right angle. I don't see anything wrong with that.
And they've got a challenge. They need to get people, you know, whether you agree with piracy or not, they need to get people onto Windows 10, you know, because lots of people are stuck in Windows 7, didn't go to Windows 8. And at the same time, they can't just say, by the way, see if you pirate it, have it for free.
No, because then if everyone that's paid for it, it's going to be a little bit cheesed off with that.
Well, you know, if you've paid 20 quid, 30 quid, 40 quid, whatever it comes in at, you're going to sit there and say, so hold on, you know, so, you know, Billy No Mates next door who pirates everything. Gets it all for nothing and gets a legit copy, and I go and buy it like some schmuck.
Yeah. I mean, what they are saying also is that, well, there are rumors that it doesn't actually, even if it is pirated, it will still work. You'll just have a watermark on the screen telling you that it's a pirated copy. So it does, and maybe they'll limit it on some of the security updates. But in the past, they've even updated pirate copies of that because it keeps the whole network cleaner and safer if they can patch everything. Yes. So yeah, we'll see. I think it sounds like a sensible approach, to be honest, and let's wait for the final announcement before we make proper judgment. Spotify been busy adding additional content, so they're going to be introducing video clips, podcasts and activity based playlists. So videos, so it seems like a sensible addition to their Armada and podcasts is a great one, which I've been asking for a long time. Not clear yet whether it's going to be just massive podcasts or whether small people like us will be allowed in there as well. It'd be nice to be able to get on to Spotify as a new delivery platform. And finally, these activity kind of based things. So it'll detect now when if you're running it on your smartphone, it'll detect if you're running, and it'll actually pick songs based on your pace, which I think is quite a clever idea, and will adapt as you're going. So maybe start with Flight of the Bumblebee as you're sprightly swinging out your drive, and maybe come back to, you know, the funeral march or something as you're trudging home. But yeah, so some quite innovative stuff going on at the moment.
Yep. And it's clear. I mean, they didn't have to do something. I mean, I think the way Spotify worked was fine.
But it's fine for Spotify. It's not fine for artists, but this doesn't address any of that. 25 billion hours of listening on Spotify so far.
Yeah. And we're a couple of weeks away from all sorts of rumours about the next version of iTunes Music, which looks to be
we've been a month away from hearing about the next version of iTunes for
They bought what did you call it, didn't they? I'm trying to remember what they bought last year.
Doesn't mean they're going to announce anything. It just means
they bought Beats, and they seem to have, if you look at some of the beaters and some of the kind of stuff that's kicking around, it does look like they've got a new service, sitting on top of Beats. And that doesn't mean Spotify had to do something, but as you say, things like podcasts not being there.
It seemed like a no-brainer, really, to put them in there.
I mean more so than things like a video clip. Mm.
If you're a desktop client, then that makes much more sense to have the videos in there. But
yes,
and then they can spread wider and be another sort of Netflixy type thing.
But if you think from a I've already got a client that plays audio, so I could. You think podcast would be a fairly easy one to add in, and video clips, a bit more of a kind of fundamental change. The playlist stuff looks really smart. Obviously, that 25 billion hours are listening, and obviously lets them. There's lots of data there that they can mine and start, because they're talking about it's not just pick a rock, genre and that's it. They will look at what you listen to, what your friends listen to, what you've listened to in the past, what time of day it is. Try and work out a lot more about what you want to hear right now, and that does sound very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's the every they're all doing this. Going down that selective rather than sort of just global one size fits all. They're trying to fit it to you. And although it meets with resistance from, I'd like to listen to stuff outside of my comfort zone or whatever. At the end of the day, Facebook still is Facebook, even though it does the same things. Twitter's still kind of the same thing. We're always going to have this. There's too much information now to show to you. So we've got to figure out a way of trying to tailor it to you. And by looking at your past listening to people who kind of have similar tastes, why not? I think it sounds like a good idea.
Yep.
Boom. iPlayer. It's shutting down.
What?
In foreign countries. So you can... Okay. So if you were an expat relying on a subscription to iPlayer to actually watch and view British TV, unfortunately... during June, when your subscription ends, that will be disappearing. They can't keep up, apparently, with pressure from Hulu and Netflix. And that's basically, they're not earning enough money on it to make it viable. It'll still be available in the UK. It's not changing the service in the UK. It's just if you're using that service outside of the UK. So you can expect this is your last month of subscribing to that. Boom. Flickr. Auto-tagging. Fails.
It fails sometimes. Week before we talked about the Flickr update and how it auto tags, and I was like, oh, I don't know if I like that, and you were like, come on, it's the future, get with it. and that future's fine unless you're black, and it tags your picture with the word ape,
which is really, really not a very comfortable position for Flickr to be in. I assume they're trying to fix it.
I hope so. There's a couple other ones that were a little bit kind of dodgy as well, and people have pointed out that somebody with there was a kind of white guy with some face paint on, and they were tagged ape as well. So it's maybe not a racist tag; it's just wrongly thinking you're some.
Well,
sort
I don't
of
think anyone
animal.
Programmed it with a racist view point. I doubt they sat there and thought this would be funny or whatever.
Definitely not. And it is one of these. It's one of the problems with the kind of the whole machine tagging of things.
Absolutely, it's going to be
you
eternal.
You will get some false positives. And you can see that when you do image matching and when you look at it on like Google search, and it'll 100%. Be like match, match, match. Oh,
weird. What the hell is that?
Or Apple, if you ever look at the, if you ever look at the kind of, it picks out faces and it'll pick out like, you know, some sort of random shape in a cushion or something. It'll be like, that's not a face.
I did my Google profile picture. I have a screen grab of it somewhere. And it's quite, all it is me, head and shoulders. And I uploaded it and it said, we cannot see a face in this picture. And it's
the faceless man.
Cheeky kiss. too ugly for profile pictures.
I think you could sue them.
I probably can. Like I say, I took a screen grab and I start a court case. Lily has kicked up a bit of a fuss around the internet. It was probably during the last week. Facebook suddenly became alive with pictures of Lily. So this is a sort of mini drone. It's not a controllable drone. It's a self-guided, self-maintaining drone. But it's small-ish, and basically you can throw it in the air and it will take pictures of you as you are doing activities. So the idea is that you wear this kind of tracking device, which it knows where it is, and you can tell it to take video of you while you're kayaking down a river or base jumping off, not base jumping, while you're, I don't know, doing something else very sporting. And like all these videos, actually most of the time it will be people in their garden demoing it to other people. That'll be the life of this drone. But yeah, it'll follow around. It'll even do panning shots. It's clever enough to realise, say, if you're snowboarding down a mountain, when you've, say, done a jump or something similarly exciting, and it will suddenly, you know, it's got a setting to go to slow-mo capture. So quite clever.
And it's waterproof as well.
Yeah, and so the pictures of this thing, is pre-orders $499, which is actually seemed quite good, going up to $999.
So after it's out, so if you want to take a punt on it, $500. If you want to wait, $1,000.
Yeah, and they're saying at the moment the prototype's just too big, too clunky. They want it to be smaller, more pocket-sized.
But it definitely it looked quite a compelling product, and almost was like a kind of, you know, that easy-to-use portable drone. That you don't need to worry about having all these controls. You don't need to worry about, you know, it'll take care of, you know, when the battery's running out, it'll come down and land. And it's got all that intelligence built in. It does the, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, I just want to go out and enjoy myself. I don't need to worry, and I want amazing shots. And I thought it was quite nice. There was people saying this isn't like the next version of a drone. This is like the next version of cameras.
Yeah, so it's like your portable tracking camera, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, you know, amazing. So forget it's a drone. You know, just think it's a camera.
I mean,
that's just a different way of doing it.
Let's face it, if you took it onto the top of a Scottish mountain and threw it up in the air, it ain't never coming back. That's it. Bye. That'll be his last visit.
Unfortunately, I need to fix my knee before I go up a hill. So,
get that better. But don't throw drones up in the air at the top of Scottish mountains. It's never going to be a good idea. Oculus Rift has sadly had to drop off the Mac and Linux support. So they have kind of come back and said, pretty much this needs a supercomputer to run it. It will, and basically they can't support Linux and OS X at the moment. They still want to develop for Linux and OS X, but they've put that on hold indefinitely. So they don't have a timeline on that at the moment. But yeah, so the idea is that although the kind of specs that this thing needs when it first, you know, when they release it will be high, over time, they're not going to change those requirements, and therefore, as those machines get cheaper, so the availability of this kind of technology will become wider and wider, sort of in line probably with the kind of usage curve as well. So if someone really wants this, then they're going to have a high-level computer. And as time goes on and it becomes more popular, the specs will be cheaper and cheaper to run with.
Slightly disappointed when you read the headline, but I think sensible and... You know, if you think of what releases next year, it will be very high-end gaming PCs that will drive it. I mean, even laptop-wise, I think they were saying if you're looking for some sort of, you know, gaming laptop to drive it, there's none out right now that have the right specs.
Won't do it. It's got some pretty, you know, big requirements going on. I think you said last week, or we both said, I think, pretty much, if the PlayStation market can nail their version, you know, they don't have any of those requirements. If it's plug and play, which that, you know, they're such a more confined, you know, they know what their hardware model is, they know that the requirements, and they know what's available to them, so they can make something that's plug and play. In the PC, open PC market, that's harder to do. So if they can get it anywhere near as good on the technical front, then they've probably got that sewn up. If they and it's, you know, Xbox can come along and do something similar.
Yeah,
it's just such it's a much more controlled environment.
I guess we'll find it a lot more mid-June. I'm saying, yes. Yesterday, the day before, that they're doing some sort of event in June, which I think was to kind of get more maybe for developers and start to set the scene a bit more clearly to people that says, you know, next year, here's what you need and here's where we're going and here's where we are right now.
If they're aiming to release next year, that they've got to start doing that because they need those developers on board and they need to be solid in what they're telling developers. You know, a bit like, you know, when Microsoft releases or when they release a new you know, console, they have to start giving out at least the kind of the hardware specs to developers that far in advance because it takes that long to develop games and stuff. So, and that's where this heart, you know, that's the heartland of this product.
I'm assuming, oh no, it's June 11th. It's June 11th because I was going to say, is it during WWDC? Not WWDC, E3, but it's actually the week before E3. They're doing it during WWDC.
Okay, interesting. Okay, I think we'll just finish on, you mentioned to me a couple, I think it was last week, that The Witcher was due out and it was getting spectacular reviews. And yeah, it's out and it is a pretty spectacular game. If you like your role-playing game type, action-y type things, I've yet only brushed the surface of the game, but it does look good. It looks pretty, you know, of all the games I've played so far, this one feels pretty immersive. And wobble is what makes it stand out. Everything wobbles. Be it a tree, be it...
All I was going to say... All I was going to say it was any game that encourages you to have a sex scene on a unicorn must be an absolute
I've not
win.
Got to that bit yet.
Neither have I. I've not bought it. It's a kind of game that I get tempted because everybody's playing it and I know...
But you know it's not your kind of game.
No. And it's like I've kind of... And I'm swamped at the moment.
You'll probably get just as much out of just watching a few YouTube videos. You've seen what you need to see and then done. You've seen how good it looks.
I'd rather fire up like Halo 2 and die constantly.
So yeah, this is, you know, this is another 100-hour epic. So 100 hours time from now, I plus a bit of sleeping and a bit of working and a bit of Big Brother watching.
What a waste!
I'll probably get to the end of it and I'll report back then. But it will take me forever. Yeah,
he says 2 weeks from now. Oh, yeah, what's done? Forever is 2 weeks.
Sometimes having no life is a good thing. Right, that's the end of our podcast. If you want to find out more about who we are, what we do, digitaloutbox.com. info@digitaloutbox.com is our mail address. Twitter is digitaloutbox. I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK, and you can find out all about my racing antics, academyracer.co.uk. Where can we find you, Ian?
My tweets are at Shweeper and my website is iandee.net, and your Twitter account really is a perfect summation of somebody that does nothing.
Very, very occasionally I tweet. It's very exciting the days I tweet.
I've got a Google alert just for those days.
Right. On that exciting note, let's say goodbye and we'll speak to you next week. Goodbye.
Ta-da.
I wish I could say my tweeting was of high quality, but yet, you know, small number, but high quality. But actually, it's just small number and really, really crap.